This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Are you ready for the Baskin and Phelps cruise? You excited for that?
You ever been on a cruise?
Yes, I've been on two.
I've been on two.
I got super sick first couple days. Make sure you wear the ear patch.
I wore an ear patch. It made me sick. I went to play golf. I was sick. I took it off. I felt better in about four holes.
By taking the patch off?
Yeah.
Oh, the patch helped me, man.
Yep.
We
had the opposite effect on me.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, the Baskin and Phelps cruise will be...
Cruise down the Cuyahoga.
In a canoe.
Get your kayak. Yep.
In a canoe. We'll have a six-pack.
Andy will paddle.
A six-pack of, what, iced tea hanging off the side?
I hope so.
That's good. All right. Danny, you coming?
I'll sit on a lawn chair somewhere.
In the canoe?
I don't know. It's a real small canoe.
Within throwing distance.
Will you?
So we can throw stuff at us.
Hody,
maybe
we'll
I'll just tube behind you.
We'll let Hody paddle, right?
Oh, I'm paddling, all right.
All right.
So we've heard.
Away from us?
No. Not paddling.
You know what we'll do? We'll do the canoe, and then you can be in a little paddle boat behind us. It'll be cool.
No, I want to be in the canoe with everybody. I think I belong with you guys.
I think probably less than 0.2 miles, we'd throw you out of the canoe. I'm just saying. Can you swim?
I don't think I want to swim.
You wouldn't have to because you'd be wearing your life jacket, young man. Make sure you're wearing that.
Well, if I'm jet skiing in the back, that's also fine. I'm for that.
We're not that strong. Sorry.
Well, you know what? Maybe you should be.
The Baskin sigh has reached the room because it is time for NFL Rapid Fire. Dan Menigan, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, so let's begin NFL Rapid Fire with a little bit of thoughts of Monday Night Football, which you, of course, listened to on your home of Westwood One's coverage of Monday Night Football, 92.3 The Fan. The big one being Daniel Jones. Like, if you guys were in charge of the Giants after the 26-18 loss, Daniel Jones not exactly having a great game, would you start looking at Drew Lock to come help and save the problems that you have? You're 2-6 right now. And I don't know if you're a Drew Lock away from solving it, but would you do it, Jeff?
Indeed, I would not. I don't think the quarterback is the issue there. He just seemed discombobulated. Did you see that two-point conversion they went for?
I thought he sucked.
Well, he speaks highly of you.
I know he had 264 yards, but when they needed him to come through at the end of the game, when Browns fans needed Daniel Jones to come through at the end of the game, I was irritated. I almost called the poobah, who's now living the good life down south, just to be mad at him about the Giants. Thanks, man. Appreciate your help.
Like Drew Lock is the answer?
I don't know if Drew Lock's the answer. I was mad at Daniel Jones last night. I wasn't thinking about any quarterback. I was focused. I was focusing my irritation on one player alone.
Nice.
Tyrone Tracy looked good last night, didn't he? I hope he's
sure
okay.
Did.
He got hurt in the end of the game, didn't he?
Yep. Concussion. Yeah. Well, head injury.
So I was mad. It's just my general. It was a 9-9 game. I was hoping that the Steelers, because I'm sitting here praying that the Browns can get back in this thing, and we need the Steelers to lose at every opportunity.
Last thought on Monday Night Football. Steelers have won 22 straight home games on Monday Night
Football.
That's
unbelievable.
That is wild.
Yeah, that's weird.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's just one of those things that's like, huh.
It's in the script. So.
Oh, it is?
Yes, it is.
Do you have the script? Can we get to the end?
If I showed you the script, then, you know, bad things would happen.
The shadowy figures would take you out.
Do, 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 do.
Well, you know, you got to look at the shadowy figures. All right, we're going to play a fun game of we're a week from the trade deadline. It will be next week at this time. So we're going to play a fun game of what would you do?
Nice.
Excited?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Miami Dolphins are sitting at 2-5 so far. Tua Tagovailoa came back this week. It looked better, but they lost to the Arizona Cardinals anyway. Andy Baskin, if you are the Miami Dolphins at the trade deadline sitting at 2-5, what would you do?
Sell. They have a 92% chance of not making the playoffs. Their odds of making the playoffs are just a tiny bit better than the Browns. They're sitting at 2% for the sixth spot and 4% for the seventh spot, which makes me think that if the Browns can turn things around, they would get to climb into, I don't know, 10% out. If I'm the Dolphins, I'm selling.
If I'm the Dolphins, I'm doing the same thing the Browns are doing. If I can get rid of somebody who's not under contract for me next year, who I don't want to have back, and I can get a reasonable draft choice for them, okay, I can move them along. But I am not a big fan of NFL teams just dumping pieces that they have under contract for more than a year, that they can control for more than a year. To me, it's not like the trade deadline in Major League Baseball. It's a different thing. You're trying to build this thing, and you need a lot of talent to make that happen.
All right, so counterpoint. Feel free to get something you can throw at me when I say this, too. We will allow violence in this segment. So you're the one who has always told me I would rather take those fourth, fifth, and sixth round draft picks in the offseason and trade them for tangible assets that can help my team win now.
Absolutely.
Okay? And I agree with that sentiment. What's the difference between doing that at the trade deadline and doing that at the offseason?
Tangible asset that you can get as a player who can help you for an entire season. If I'm trying to acquire talent, by all means, I don't mind trading draft picks for talent. I don't like doing it the other way around. For instance, I want Myles Garrett on this team. If somebody made me a great trade offer for Myles Garrett, am I ever going to get anybody who could approach his impact on a football field? I doubt it. So I wouldn't do that because you have Myles under control for a while, team control contractually. You need to build a team and you need a lot of pieces. And trading good football players is not usually a way to do that. My own thought.
No, it's a good explanation.
I think it's hard to get good football players and
really impactful guys.
Yeah, I'm not getting rid of those guys for what could be something great. What could be, especially with the Browns track record and drafting lately, and when you look at it from the Browns' perspective, I don't know. I have to go back and look at the Dolphins' track record. But, I mean, they're sitting there. They're a click above us right now, which makes me think we can get a third win against them.
First-round picks mean something big. Second-round picks.
If you do the right thing.
Second-round picks mean something.
Well, what do they tell you? First-round pick is usually like a blue chipper. Like, that's your starter. You're building around that one. Second-round pick or blue chip, red chip kind of guys that you can build around. Third-round picks typically are starters, fourth and on are coin flips.
You want second-round picks. You want third-round picks.
Yeah.
After that, I don't really care.
You can talk me into fourths.
You better do something.
I mean, you're
with
picking
them.
Like the 100th best player coming out when you're in the fourth round.
It's magic beans.
So, you know.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Who's to say you can't find somebody who's an undrafted free agent who is going to test off the charts and be really good?
Yeah, but I've heard you argue to draft a kicker in the first round before, so.
Wow.
Never.
Thank you.
Never. I've never met a guy that doesn't think there's any kicker on earth that's not worth being drafted.
That is correct.
All right, next on the list, let's go into the darkness with the New York Jets.
Wow.
I mean, what are you?
Did you see the trade thought today?
What do you even do with this team?
Said, would you trade Aaron Rodgers? Should you trade Aaron Rodgers right
who
now?
Who would want Aaron Rodgers right now?
I can't imagine that anybody would.
He can't move. And his entire offense right now is nothing but like go balls and slot fades and, you know, basically like, oh yeah, my guys will beat your guys because I don't feel like learning an actual offense.
Coach Stepanski giving us the lowdown. Thank you.
It's obnoxious. That team is unwatchable. They're going to be on Thursday Night Football this week and people tune in because it's the Jets and Aaron Rodgers.
New York, man.
And
New York runs the world.
And we're all going to walk out of this game going, oh my God, this team is horrid. They're a mess.
You know, the funny thing is, I think they have some interesting pieces. I mean, Garrett Wilson's tough. Breece Hall is tough. Tyler Conklin is nobody's version of Travis Kelce. He's a good football player at tight end. And if Aaron Rodgers could orchestrate things a little bit better, Aaron just looks like an old quarterback who's coming off a big injury. He hasn't had his usual stuff.
I concur with all you say there, Professor Phelps.
Their defense is still pretty solid.
That they are, and they're getting Hassan Reddick back, which should help the cause as well. So the other one to look at is the Cincinnati Bengals, who a lot of people were staring at and saying, hey, this is a team that could make their way there. And the offense looks like it's doing okay. It's just that defense is ugh. But Joe Burrow in the postgame press conference said, quote, I think 10 wins usually gets you in, so we got to win 7 out of the next 9. That's doable. And we'll go from there. I think offensively he thinks that, Andy. I don't know if that defense thinks the same way.
They're just not on the same page. You're right. Offensively, I do think they could get there. Their defense will not get them there. I still can't believe the Browns played as bad against the Bengals as they did, because that's a game the Browns should have won. Like, yeah. Of all the games that they've lost and the close ones, that was the most regrettable one.
Don't you think?
Or, as Les would say, the most recent.
Don't you think there are numerous teams that could win 7 of the next 9 games? And some of them who have struggled so far in the first 8 games? I do. I think there are several teams that could, in theory. I think the Browns could, in theory.
Well, then, let me give you a fun one of what would you do.
Cincinnati could.
It's amazing how many 2-win teams there are in the AFC right now. The Bengals, the Dolphins. I'm sorry, the Bengals are 3-win team.
Let me give you a...
Hang on. The Dolphins, the Browns, the Jags, the Jets, and the Patriots. All 2-win. And the Raiders, 2-win teams.
All right, a fun what would you do, the Los Angeles Rams. And the only reason I say they're a fun one is because they're 3-4 right now. The division
and they're
lead
coming on
is the Arizona Cardinals, the 49ers, and the Seahawks are all sitting at 4-4. The Cardinals would have the tiebreaker against all of them for his division wins. So, guys, if you're the Rams and you're getting Cooper Kupp back and you got Puka Nacua back,
you got them both back.
The defense is playing a little bit better. What would you do if you're
Matthew
the Rams?
Stafford lit it up last game.
What would you do?
I'd go win some football games.
Yeah,
would you make a trade? Upgrade. Would you go try to get somebody to help you, or would you pack it in and go, let's see what this looks like?
I wouldn't do what they did before. I don't know that they're a Super Bowl contender, so I'm not giving up first round picks. But by all means, you want a third or a fourth, fifth for somebody that I can actually plug in and play who can help me win right now, I would do that. Remember, it's not quite the same. There's so many guys in the league. It's not the same as the NBA, where free agent destinations are a huge, huge deal. I don't think. You guys correct me if you disagree. But still, free agency, Los Angeles, Rams, you know, SoFi, the whole thing, it's more attractive than a lot of other options for players.
Disney, it's right there.
It's more attractive. Not as much as it is in the NBA, where lifestyle, culture, and image mean, I think, a lot more than it means in the NFL to players.
All I know is the West is wide open. It is wide. I mean, the Cardinals are only 4-4.
If I'm the Rams, I'm going to try and make some moves.
All right, we'll wrap it up with this. Cowboys sitting at 3-4, and boy, they don't look good either. Would you try to make a move if you're Jerry to get somebody in there? Or are you packing
Jerry,
it in?
I could see him trying to make a move. They're another 3-4 team. It's weird how you look at the perspective on the two of these, and the Rams just feel like they're on the up, and the Cowboys don't. They're 3-4.
If I'm the Cowboys, that might be a situation where I'm looking to trade pieces and get draft choices, and then I'm looking to hire a general manager to make better draft choices.
Speaking of making better choices throughout a game, Greg Williams made some good choices along the way. Let's see what kind of choices he would make. Why do you look at me like this?
I'm just waiting to see where this goes.
He did. And then I'm thinking about one thing that maybe could have gone a different way, but that's okay. It's not a big deal. But Greg Williams will join us next. We love talking to him. He's one of our favorite guests. And he is next. 216-474-0092. Guest, former Browns defensive coordinator, former interim head coach for the Browns. And you can come get some with Greg and Blake. Oh, on Big Play, they are spectacular. And he is Greg Williams, and he is on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Coach, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you guys today?
We are good. Okay, first, I just got to start with this, because I wondered what it would be like on the sidelines if you were coaching that Bears-Washington game the other day with the Hail Mary and Tyreek Stevenson. I watched that video, and he's like taunting the fans. He's like, oh, there's a play going on here. And then I wondered what it would be like if he walked off the field and you were standing there. Tell me what that would have been like.
Well, you would have loved this, is that number one was he's also the person who was late getting back into responsibility and not doing what he was supposed to do. He ended up tipping the ball into the hands that lost the game. So what would have happened would have been the next day for make sure everybody understands that I say what I mean what I say, he'd be on the streets, I'd cut him.
Wow.
That's why I want you to be my coach all the time.
That's exactly right.
And again, it's not about salary cap. It's not about where he was drafted or whatever. But those are the type of things that you can't tolerate when you're going to win as a team. And all of a sudden, everybody else in the organization, everybody else in the locker room is looking at me, looking at you, to why you tolerate these type of things when you have said how we're going to do things. And that's just how it is. And, I think about that all the time. I was watching that particular thing, and it's unless you've been on my staffs before, and there's a lot of the coaches are out there now that, have grown up and been some great assistants with me that now they're coordinating or being head coaches in the league. But the last three plays of a first half and the last three plays of a second half, and depending upon the score, are you defending a field goal, a game to win it, or are you defending a touchdown? We work those every single week, and it's in the last period of the last practice preparation, not walkthrough. We're practicing full speed. If we play a Sunday game, it's on Friday. And we go through these situations of exactly how it has to be. And time on the clock, score on the scoreboard, and all that. And we rep them, we work them. And it was interesting, and I think Matt Eberflus have done a really, really good job, as a head coach there. But you can see that he's running up and down the sideline on the second to the last play because they don't play that. They give them a chance to get into field position to get a chance now on the last play of the game to be close enough to throw the Hail Mary play. They didn't have any timeouts to play the second to the last play. So we play what's called a trap coverage to where you have to throw the ball inbounds. We're defending the sideline and the goal line, but we're defending the sideline, making you have to throw it inbounds because the clock will not stop. They didn't have enough time to complete a pass, to get into field goal, to get into a Hail Mary situation. They didn't have any timeouts to stop the clock, and the game would have been over had they not allowed that to happen. So it was back-to-back plays. We do the same thing there on the last play of the game, and going back to my buddy Ryan days and some things that I've hybridized off of that is that we defend the goal line, we defend the hook and lateral type situation. We have our position players in that way, but we bring five or six on a blitz pressure to not allow the quarterback to bake a pizza running around all over the place. Okay. He held the ball for over 12 seconds to throw the ball and launch it, and I learned this from Buddy Ryan is why do you worry about having to defend a 60-yard, a 70-yard pass with a great arm quarterback when I'm not going to give him that amount of time? Okay, we're going to blitz him and put him down in the pocket. It's going to have to come out in a hurry and play the hook and lateral play because we're not going to let you launch the ball down the field. And I've got, since I started developing that back in the early 2000s, and if you haven't been on my staff, you really don't know how to do those type of things. But we've got, I think I've got on my cut-up clip, like 28 snaps of different types of things that we've done throughout all the years to how we defend those plays. And I just shake my head, and it's a special situation that should be covered in pro football. And what a great play by the Commanders and not a very good play by the Bears.
Greg, if you're a member of the Browns organization and last year you went 4-1 in games that Deshaun Watson played, but the offense didn't click. Joe Flacco comes in, the offense clicks. This year, clearly the offense struggled with Deshaun at quarterback. Jameis comes in against a pass defense that wasn't very good coming in, but it's still the Ravens defense. And Jameis throws for over 300, and the offense looks better. What do you think moving forward?
The big thing there is, and it's what I've been saying this whole year, this is not a negative knock of completion on Deshaun. But you can see that he's been dealing with a lot of things upstairs, and he's not processing or he hasn't been processing or doing things in a timely manner. And I have said, from week two on, that Jameis should be the guy in there playing. And here's what I want you to see. He had the second fastest snap to release time in the league this past weekend. The offensive line executed and did a much better job because they knew exactly where the plant feet of the quarterback was in the pocket because of how it's designed to where you never get above 7.5 yards with your back heel in the pocket, so that now you can face speed rushers that are trying to rush. And Deshaun was always planting his back foot at 11, 12, 13 yards. And I don't care, Joe Thomas, who's one of the best Cleveland Brown tackles in the world, could not protect the quarterback because of the launch foot of where the quarterback's foot is. And, hey, you know, he threw for over 300 yards, just like Joe Flacco. And the reason that Joe came here last year is that Alex Van Pelt called and talked to me about him with me, because I've been with Joe on teams, and so did Andrew. And I said, hey, bring him in, work him out, and then make sure everybody knows it's your idea to bring him onto the team. And take a look at right now, you know, the Colts. You know, if they're going to play Joe Flacco right now, they're going to be winning, you know. And Anthony Richardson was, you know, he was abysmal here this past week. And here, and there would be another thing right here, too, so they, that the fans can hear this, too. When he wants to tap out because he's tired, he's going to go up in the stands and sell beer. I'm not messing with him.
That was weird, wasn't it, Greg?
Yeah. You know, I mean, you're a professional athlete and you're tired? I don't care anything about that, okay? This is what we do. And now you're going to step in the huddle, and you're going to, and an offensive lineman that's protecting you, that if you play 74 snaps in a ball game on offense, no offensive linemen come out. They play all 74 snaps against power, against speed, against impose your will kind of defensive linemen. And now you're going to tell me that you need a break? Yeah, well, go up and sell beer. You know, this is not this is not the kind of sport that you need to be playing in.
Greg, here's the hard part. Everything you said, like, from a fan perspective, makes total sense. And, like, I'm listening to you, and it's simple and clear about the relationship between the quarterback and the offensive line. And it's hard to believe that for any other reason than money that they didn't switch quarterbacks earlier in the year. It's hard not to look at it when, because I think the fans saw it the same way you made it sound, so simple, so easy. And I know you're trying to, you know, bring a guy back from injury. I just can you give me your thoughts on why they wouldn't have gone to Winston earlier?
A lot of those types of things come from, you know, people that aren't, you know, in the everyday battle of what it is to be in professional football, you know, which is the most powerful sport in the world, you know, and that can be from, you know, management positions, ownership positions, those type of things, because you want to have an excuse because of the analytical score or the fiscal score and all that kind of stuff is much more important than actually winning a game. But when you're in a huddle and you're in the locker room, and you're looking at another grown man in the eyes about, we've got to go now and defend every blade of grass, and we've got to go out there and be in a fist fight in a phone booth every single snap, but yet you're not going to give us the chance to win a game by playing the best players that we have here. Hey, I'm just letting you know, another grown man understands that there's other things going on behind the scenes, and sometimes they don't give as much as they need to give because they know there's other things going on. And I think that it should have been done beforehand, and those are just the kind of things that go on. And in my reputation has been is that I'm hired to make those decisions, and you're hired to do other types of things. But this is what's going to happen when we step inside the white lines.
Greg, how do you move on at quarterback this year? After this year, I guess. Could you possibly bring Deshaun back? What do you do?
Yeah, those are all the types of things that goes on, you know, that are being discussed every single second of every day. But there, you know, unless there is a drastic, improvement in mental capabilities, not physical, but mental, on how you go about processing and how you go about speeding up your decision making, okay, then it's time to go on, and it's time to get on to the next, next great player that you can go inside the white lines and win games with. And that's what the National Football League is about.
Greg, nobody wants to be in a situation where you've got, you know, two wins this early in the season, and now you're trying to figure out a way to get back in this thing. How much of a catapult could a win like Sunday be if they kind of leave things intact and, you know, you take it one game at a time and try to dig your way out of this gigantic hole?
You know, this is one of the things that I said on our Come Get Some show. I hope everybody gets a chance to take a look at that, too. I can't believe that now that I'm not coaching inside the White Lions. I'm on the dark side with the media, like you guys now.
Welcome to the dark side.
Good to have you, Greg. At least for now.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, we needed a coach, so we're glad you're with us now. So.
But that's one of the things I said on the show was that, you know, unless there was some type of a big confidence building win. And I have so much respect for the Baltimore Ravens and John Harbaugh and that whole organization. I think it's a really strongly run organization. Is that now take a look at the confidence inside the building. Take a look at the confidence inside the White Lions. Take a look at the confidence that's growing inside the meeting rooms and inside the walkthroughs and the practices. So now this could be a big jump, but they got to take it one week at a time. Okay, you can't be moving on and doing things outside of what this particular game right here means.
Greg, can you explain to me too the whole switch for Kevin Stefanski and Ken Dorsey? Like, what does it actually mean when you're sitting there? And I mean, obviously, you're coordinating with other people in the building all week, trying to figure out what the offensive game plan was. How, can you see the difference in a Ken Dorsey called game and Kevin Stefanski? Because to me, the offense looks similar, but they executed well this weekend. So explain to me and to fans what that move meant.
You know, I played the quarterback position too, and I've been an offensive coordinator for 10 years and then was, you know, very, very, very drastically involved in the offense when I took over as a head coach here and helping turn Baker around too. With all that, and you know, Baker could be a long ways off, you know, and he understood that I knew exactly what I was talking about. With, you know, when I took over, we were dead last in the league with the sacks allowed at 38 sacks and 41 other hits on the quarterback. In the next 8 weeks, we only allowed 2 sacks and 7 hits on the quarterback. How? Why? Because the quarterback's got to block you. Get it out of your hand. Get it out of your hand. And we had a siren in practice all the time where any time that the ball was held for 2.5 seconds or longer, then that is coaching. And then that is allowing things to happen disrespectfully to the rest of your teammates on the field. Get it out of your hands. Get it out of your hands. Get it out of your hands. And that's what Jameis was doing. The other things, what I thought Ken Dorsey did are really, really good things because there was less distractions going on, is that I thought they substituted faster with the packages going on and off the field, and I thought the play call was getting into the helmet faster. I monitor every single game I watch on film, when I'm studying opponents, when I'm watching on TV, and when we're playing in a game. During the game, I'm looking at the play caller on the other sideline once I know what package is on the field, and I'm watching to see how long it takes for him to spit the call out. The longer the call, it's probably a pass. The shorter the call, it's probably a run. Okay, and I'm also looking at how long they allow the offense to break the huddle to study what the defense is in. I thought this past week there was only about 3 or 4 plays in the entire games, you know, where Ken Dorsey got the play called into Jameis's helmet a little bit slow. When you see the offense break the huddle between 21 seconds and 18 seconds on the play clock, now watch the processing that goes on through motions and shifts and all that type of stuff. And I thought they cleaned up some of the penalties that were going on pre-snap. Nothing more pisses me off is to see motion and shifting penalties and the offensive play have to stop because what are you doing in practice every day? What are you doing in meetings every day? Why are those things happening? And we had less of those types of negative plays that cause longer down and distances and play calls that have to be more perfect. everything was good. It was a good processing going on, and the next step is to improve even more this week.
Greg, how do you approach 2-6 as an NFL team? What do you do here?
The biggest thing is that we know 2-6 is up there, okay? But right now is we work all week long as if it's 0-0, okay? The most important game, okay, is this week. But how does that go about? The most important meeting is right now. The most important practice is right now. The most important rep is right now. And then nothing more irritates me, too, is that when people want to talk about being the best in the world that ever, ever done this job, can you look yourself in the eye and say, I'm going to be the best I can be today? No, I'm going to be the best I can be on this play. You know what? I'm going to be the best I can be watching this play on film. I'm doing all the extra work behind the scenes when nobody else is watching. Can I be the best then? Because now when I want to go hoop-de-hoop-de-hoop-de-la and then yell around acting like I'm better than I am on game day, hey, focus on what your job is. Get your job done at the best and be able to look another grown man in the eye and say, come get some.
I love it. I love it. And don't forget to come get some while you're watching you and your son Blake on that podcast and on the show. It's always a lot of fun. And then I also want to bring up Hall of Framers coming up in Berea, what, on November 18th? Is that right?
November 16th.
16th,
and
I'm
it's
sorry,
a Saturday from noon to 2, and we're going to have a great day there. And you got to get online and buy the tickets. And, you know, we're going to have a sign autographs, but also answer questions and tell stories. And again, make sure that when you show up and you ask me a question that I don't hurt your feelings by telling you the honest answer to the story.
I love it. Come get some on Big Play. Make sure you're checking that out with Greg and Blake Williams. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Greg, thank you.
Hey, I appreciate you guys, okay, and the fans do too. So have a great day, and always remember, come get some.
Thank you, Greg. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Coach. And again, he was on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. I love talking to him. Absolutely love it. All right, let's do it 2020. Andrew Hody is standing by, ready to give you all the information you need in this 2020.